This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Also, help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day by becoming a Trek FM patron through Patreon. Get access to exclusive content and become part of the team. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertz, our General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Hey, Matthew.
Hey there, Chris. How's it going?
It's going well. Great to have you here. But of course, Matthew isn't the only person with me here today, because we have a very special guest, not only from DS9, but also from TNG. It's Michael Dorn. Michael, welcome to The Orb.
Thank you very much.
It's wonderful to have you here with us on the show today. Of course, we're going to talk about Worf, the character you played for so many years on two shows, and is also a character that you're going to be reprising, hopefully, in the pilot of a new series with Marina Sirtis, if things go well. So we want to talk about that with you more later in the show. But to start, we wanted to hear from you about what the transition was like for you going from The Next Generation and the TNG films into Deep Space Nine, because you had been playing that character for 7 years, you had Generations under your belt, and here you are going in, and we all know how that makeup chair and all was for you over the years. You're signing on to do many more years of this. What was your thought process at the time?
There wasn't really much of a thought process, just because it happened very quickly, and definitely was out of the blue. It wasn't something that I had heard about for years, or, you know, for months or anything. And so when I got the call from the producer, I was actually in Baltimore doing a video game, and he just tracked me down and called me and said, "Hey, what do you think about this?" And I go, "Oh, sounds interesting." And that really is how it happened. Once the show was over, I knew that we were going to do one or two movies at least. And so, but you know, within about 4 or 5 years, so I didn't think that there would be that much makeup that I had to deal with, except for, you know, 15 or 20 days on the movies that I had to do it. So that was great. But to actually go back and do the makeup every day again was something that, you know, after I thought about it, I went, okay, well, I can do it. You know, it's not, you know, curing cancer or anything like that. But so I just said, okay, well, I'd like to get some guarantees about the makeup and being in makeup, and since there's not a bridge, I don't have to be there, you know, every day. So if you guys could help me with that, and they were very good about it. And so that's how I, you know, that's how it started.
I'm curious, because your character on DS9 evolved into a very different and richer character than on TNG. So when you were making this decision to go do the show, did they show you the script for The Way of the Warrior? Did they tell you anything about what they had in mind for your character that was different from TNG?
No, they didn't. But the interesting thing, and a little tip to actors who are starting out, or whenever a production calls you, you know, you have a little bit of power. you know, you have a little bit of, you know, a little bit of something on your side. So I knew that. And so I just went in and said, look, you know, it doesn't matter what you're writing, you guys. I know the writers and I know the producers really well, and they've always done really good stuff. So I wasn't concerned about that. But I just didn't want to be a character that's just sitting there, you know, that is just in the background, or we hired you just to kind of be there, you know? Right. I mean, if that's the case, if you just want me just to kind of stand there and not do anything, then, you know, that's another discussion we have to make. But if you really want to, you know, infuse me into the crew, then I really want Worf to open up and to have wonderful shows and to, you know, be more a part than I was on Next Generation. And they, you know, they basically said, oh, we got this script, and they put a bunch on this blackboard and said, here are the scripts, you know. And they were about 50% right.
Okay.
They showed me about 10 episodes, you know, oh, we're going to do this. But I only five kind of materialized.
Did you have connections with other cast members like Avery or Armin or anyone like that that also helped you with the decision?
Not at all. It was my own decision. The only thing that the only thing that really was a sticking point was the negotiation, you know, because nothing malicious against me, but studios, when they have these type of situations, their goal is not to pay you, you know, and your goal is to get paid. And so my lawyer and I, who's also a great friend of mine, it was pretty tough negotiation. And that was the only thing that had any discussions. I mean, I didn't really talk to anybody on Deep Space or talk to anybody on my show, well, from our show, because there was also a non-disclosure thing where, you know, they didn't want me to let it out.
Right.
And so, I think I probably told, I may have told Marina, maybe, but I can't even remember at this point. I may not have. I actually probably didn't say anything to anybody until it was all over.
So they just heard, like your castmates from TNG suddenly heard the news that Michael's going to go and he's going to keep playing this character on the next show.
Michael, had they not heard the Klingon axiom, let the Klingon win in negotiations?
Yeah. No, they don't have any respect for Klingon ways. So
you didn't go in and talk to the producers with a batleth in your hand.
No, not at all. It was actually really fun. I mean, it was a really hard negotiation, but it was really fun because my lawyer, he's also a dear friend. I told you, you know, Ralph Wise, we were, you know, negotiating hard and we had, you know, what we wanted and they were very sort of like, you know, well, forget it. You know, it's done. We're not going to, you know, tell him he'll never work in this town again, you know, all that stuff. And we would just laugh about it. You know, we go, oh, okay. So that was the whole transition. I mean, the other transition was for me, I mean, I had two thoughts that were going through my head when I was doing this thing. First of all, no matter what anybody would tell you, they felt that the ratings were sagging in the third season and they wanted to bring another character on there, you know, and in Next Generation at that point was, I mean, we were really, I mean, even though the show had been off for, you know, a year, we were really hitting our stride in terms of popularity.
Yeah.
And so they came up with this idea. And so to me, it was a challenge, like a really great challenge where if they brought me on the show and it didn't work out, like it didn't help the ratings, then, you know, I'd just be an overpaid asshole. but on the other hand, if I got on the show and I did a really good job and it helped with the ratings, which it did, then that's something that meant something to me. You know, that's a very good achievement. And so I was looking at it that way. Also, I know what it's like. I mean, I'm not like this, but I've been on enough in the business and I've been on enough series to know that when you bring another actor into a cast that has already been together for a few years, there is an opportunity for people not to be as welcoming, you know, to have a little animosity about it, you know, especially about Next Generation, because, you know, sort of like, you know, well, we can't do it on our own. They got to bring in, you know, the big guns, you know, what is that about? You know, and they weren't, you could, there's a possibility that that was going to happen. It didn't happen. In fact, you know, I basically had, yeah, I knew all the actors because we worked right across the little alley at Paramount from each other for 2 years. So we had seen each other and we had been to, you know, we were on Larry King together one time. I mean, it wasn't like we were strangers, but it was not an issue. I mean, they were incredibly fun and I'm great friends with all of them. They're just really incredible, especially Armin and Kitty. I mean, Armin was, you know, the quintessential artist. I mean, he called and said, you know, before my first day, and he said, "Hey, Michael, I just want to call and welcome you to the show," which was fantastic.
Yeah, that's wonderful that it worked out that way.
Well, Michael, working with Worf through TNG and Deep Space Nine, you really have a great place in Star Trek legacy in the fact that, you know, you're the first character to be on two different shows, and really, you know, you're a part of the main cast in both shows. What were some of the main differences for you with the character of Worf from TNG and then transitioning into Deep Space Nine?
Well, the character, I think all of us as when it got to be the seventh season, we all were basically hitting our stride in terms of our characters. I mean, we were comfortable before, but we were very, very comfortable with the characters and with each other. And it was really starting to be an amazing cast. And so if we had gone another 3 or 4 years, then you would have seen the kind of growth that that you saw in Deep Space with my character. But because we didn't go another 3 or 4 years, I was fortunate enough that they continued that growth with, you know, when I went to Deep Space. And there was a lot of, I think also Terry Farrell was a big part of that, because we were friends before Deep Space Nine. And so when we became, you know, this item on the show, it was, you know, there was a chemistry there already that really helped with, you know, with the scenes we were doing and the stuff we're going. And I think the audience picked up on it. Also, I think that, like I said, because I asked them to really concentrate on opening up the character, they did some amazing things. I mean, they had some amazing episodes that,
definitely
that I was just blown away. I mean, it's funny too. There was a, I don't know who it was, but a guy did a bunch of little 8-minute shorts on YouTube about, Terry Farrell and me and myself, you know, our characters. And I didn't realize it until I saw that, you know, we had a lot of stuff together. I mean, I think this guy did probably 8 little YouTube 8-minute vignettes with just us, you know. So it really was, you know, when you look at it like that, you kind of go, oh, my God, this, you know, this really was a major part of the show. And you didn't think about that. I mean, it wasn't like I was going out. It wasn't a major part. I wasn't, you know, but you didn't know how much of a part of the show it was until you saw that.
Well, there's so much other stuff going on that show that, yeah, you don't necessarily feel like it was as much as what it is when you pull it out like that. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. You mentioned that on TNG, if you had gone another 3 to 4 years, we would have seen the kind of character growth for Worf that we saw in DS9. Mm-hmm. Is that just your feeling about where the character would go, or were there discussions about what they might would do with Worf with an ongoing story?
Well, at the end of Next Generation, let me just, I want to make a long story short, or longer, depending on you know, where you're sitting. The character was not quite as present the first year, but they realized very quickly that he was a great character, and they could write for him. It was something different than the other characters, and it was right. It needed that kind of, you know, pepper and the salt, as I like to say. And then towards the end of the show, it really became apparent that there was a relationship with Councillor Troy, which was going to lead to, you know, some major issues, and also some major issues between me and Riker, which they kind of touched on in the last episode. And, you know, you just can't help but write that stuff. I mean, you just can't help but see that they really liked Worf. They really liked to write for him, and he was starting to grow and do more. And although, I mean, there was no way that I was going to be, you know, get the lion's share of the episodes, because there's seven people and you just can't do that, you know?
Right.
But the episodes that I was involved with on Next Generation were intense and really, really good. And that's the one thing I got to say, is that I never had to go up to the writers and yell and scream and kick about roles, because everything they did was just fantastic. I mean, I loved everything. So I thought that, you know, it was my feeling. There weren't any discussions, but you definitely could feel that the character was growing beyond what they had initially envisioned. Yeah. And they were happy about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that. Another question kind of related to this. I'm curious, from your perspective as an actor, mm-hmm. when you look at TNG versus DS9 with Worf, and the way that on TNG, you know, Worf is always aspiring to be a Klingon. He grew up on Earth, and he has this sort of perfect vision of what it means to be a Klingon, like from a textbook perspective. But on DS9, especially because of Dax and because of Martok, mm-hmm. and his surroundings, you know, that kind of changes. And I know Matthew and I feel like Worf had more of a realistic and well-rounded view of what it meant to be a Klingon. Mm-hmm. But just approaching the storyline as an actor, what are your thoughts on that, and how you played the part and how you approached it and how it evolved from the beginning of TNG all the way to the end of DS9?
Well, I didn't. The only thing I did on TNG was to basically start them off. I gave them something to work with, which was that I played the character just as angry as possible. Mm. You know, he was no smiles, you know, no jokes, no, you know, it was all about fighting and duty and honor and running and, you know, slicing people up and stuff and, you know, the soldier part of it, you know, the warrior. And so, and they took off with that. They ran with it. So that was the one thing that I did, but I did ask them to not try to change the character, you know, not try to make him light and airy and, you know, and fun mm-hmm. and laughing and giggling. I mean, that's just not his thing.
And do you mean you asked, when you went to DS9, you asked that, or you asked them that even when you were on TNG?
Like, no, just on DS9.
Oh, on DS9, okay.
No. I mean, he lets his guard down with Dax because she's earned it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But with everybody else, he's still the same, you know? And I think that's part of his growth. Also, I just said, look, you know, you guys, I mean, this is what made him who he is and made him popular and made you want to bring him back. Let's not change that, because, you know, you'd be shooting yourself in the foot, you know, if all of a sudden he became a jokester or, you know, or
sure.
something else.
Yeah.
I mean, he still can be a good soldier and he still can be part of the crew and all that type of stuff. He just doesn't. And, you know, my idea about, you know, it was my idea about saying, hey, look, he comes from a ship, you know, the best ship in the galaxy, you know, that's cool and fun and, you know, and he's got all this stuff and, you know, he goes to this space station with all these bloody aliens, you know, and he doesn't know how to deal with it. And the way he deals with it is to retreat into himself. And so he says, look, I told him, I said, why don't you have him, once again, be the odd man out and say, look, I don't want to live on this thing. I'll go live in the, on the Defiant, mm-hmm. you know, It's four walls. It has a little hard bed. I can be by myself. I don't have to, you know, deal with all this stuff unless I have to. Mm-hmm. And he still was, you know, from that, you know, he still was this kind of grouchy, just surly kind of guy. So they didn't take that away. They tried, actually. They tried a couple of times.
What ended up being some of your favorite things to be able to do with the character because of the time that they gave you on Deep Space Nine? And you were just talking about, you know, you were just getting into that richness at the end of TNG. And then, of course, it ended. But then you got this great gift to play this character again. And what were some of the things that you were really excited to be able to add, you know, as an actor that you were excited to be able to do throughout Deep Space Nine's run, you know, for you from season 4 through 7?
Oh, I thought that the Dax relationship was a great relationship. I think it really was what we like to think of as a Klingon relationship. I mean, they were both, you know, warriors in their own right.
Definitely.
And I thought that was great. I thought that the relationship between Martok and I was an exceptional relationship.
Definitely.
And he and JG is just, I just get tickled every time I work with him. He is just a wonderful, wonderful actor. And we had such a great time. Same with Terry. We just, because we knew each other so well, you know, it was very comfortable, and that was great. And the other thing too was I was able to, there were two episodes that I forget about just being Klingon episodes. I thought they were just great episodes. Was Once More Into the Breach and Soldiers of the Empire. I thought that as Klingon episodes, they were exceptional, and they had some wonderful actors in it. And I had a chance to work with John Kalikos, you know, just before he died. So that was a real gift.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that really kind of stand out, and above and beyond all the acting and you know, the good times and everything like that, is that, you know, I came away with some really long lasting and great relationships with the other actors. So as people, you know, as friends.
For you as well, I mean, playing Worf for such a long time, I can't imagine that it would be difficult for you to have parts of yourself be in Worf. What were some of the most personal things for you that maybe transitioned into that character as you played him for so long? Or maybe vice versa. Maybe you found yourself emulating a little bit of Worf sometimes.
Michael loves to drink blood wine now, Matthew.
Yeah. Prune juice. Prune juice.
Oh, prune juice. Yes. Prune juice. Of course, prune juice.
You know, I got to say, I went through a couple of transitions where I thought at first that I was putting a lot into Worf, and then I thought, oh, Worf is putting a lot into me. And to be perfectly honest, I don't see either of those things really being true. I am nothing like Worf, and although I like his idea of honor and loyalty, but that is something that I didn't infuse into the character. Once again, the writers were responsible for that. So, like I said, I went through a couple of iterations about this. I kind of went, okay, yeah, you know, I'm more like Worf than, no, Worf is more like me. And I'm like, nah, we're not like each other at all, you know. So, so I didn't, you know, at this point, I don't see us, you know, crossing the lines or blurring the lines between Michael Dorn and Worf.
Interesting. What about on the set? You know, we've heard before as fans, we've heard about how the TNG set was very playful and the DS9 set was perhaps a bit more serious. What were the dynamics like working on the different shows? How did that differ for you?
Well, it was the same. It was like you said. I mean, it was, we were having a lot of fun on Next Generation, a lot of fun. And we were doing great work, but when they said cut, we were having a great deal of fun, yeah. You know, and I just can't say that enough. I could say it 10 times. It still wouldn't be enough to really do it justice, you know, how much fun we're having. Deep Space was a serious, more serious set, and that comes from the top down. Avery was a very serious actor. I mean, I think the first 2 years, I had seen him and talked to him, you know, across the alley there, and he didn't seem as serious. And maybe that's just because he was talking to me and, you know, and, but when I came to the show, it was a very serious show. And I wasn't, you know, I think that, for me, and I made this decision that, you know, as long as I say my lines and don't hit the furniture and I'm there on time and I do my job, I can do whatever I want to, you know, when they say cut. And so I just, I've never been a incredibly serious actor, you know, in terms of no talking or being, you know, what do you call it? A method actor, you know, where I walk on the set and I am Worf, you know, I've never believed in that. And so I just was having a good time and having a great time with the crew, you know, little by little, the first year, the cast of Deep Space, understood that I wasn't there to try to take anything from them. And I wasn't there to try to, you know, be the star of the show or nothing like that. And I think that they finally realized that, you know, hey, this guy's just, you know, just doing his job. He didn't ask to come here and you know, he's working. And I think that everybody, you know, just kind of became less and less serious.
Does that make any difference for you when you're on a set? I mean, you know, some people work well in light-hearted environments, and then some people need very serious environments to work. For you, does it affect you in any way when you're doing your acting? Do you have a preference of one or the other?
Not at all. Not at all. You know, you and the way, and I like the way my career is going because I can go in and do a, you know, a nice, interesting job and then take off. I think it's different when you're working on a show and you're around people all the time. But as a guest actor, there is just no, you know, you go in and you do as good a job as you can and yeah, you go home. But yeah, I think if I was on a show where I was the lead or I was, you know, the cast member, you know, I think that I would hope that it would be a lighthearted in terms of, you know, when they say cut, you know, that you can, you know, relax and enjoy each other. And then when they say action, you go back to what you're doing. But a lot of times, you know, you never know. You never know. You go into work and you never know what you're going to get. But I do think that it doesn't matter really to me. Like it wouldn't be like, I wouldn't be like, oh God, this is horrible. I can't act, you know, unless I'm lighthearted and fun. I mean, I can act anytime and it's, not a prerequisite that we have a good time.
Sure. Sure.
With the character of Worf, was there anything that you didn't get to do with the character that you would still love to have seen in any of the shows or, you know, with the TNG films? Was there something that you're just like, man, it would be so great if we had gotten to do this with Worf?
I would say that I wish that they had done another movie like First Contact.
Yeah.
I thought that was probably one of the best Star Trek movies from old and new. And I thought that that was the way the character was portrayed in that was great. I mean, he was serious. He was manly. He was, you know, funny. And I liked that, but, I can't say that there was anything. I mean, if anything, I would have loved for them not to have replaced Terry.
Mm, yeah.
I think was probably one thing that I really, really hoped that they would have come to an agreement with her so she didn't have to leave. Because I thought that was, I mean, that last year would have been insane, you know?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Gosh,
you know,
no kidding.
She wants to be pregnant. We're going to have a kid, you know.
Yeah.
Their relationship has always been an amazing. So I think, if anything, that was a regret.
What was it like working with Nicole, with the same character, sort of, Dax? So you have that relationship is still kind of there, but...
Nicole was, once again, she had... You might say we were kindred because she did the same thing I did. She came into a cast that, you know, the last year, you know,
yeah.
And they've been together, you know, for 7 years and I've been there for 4 years. So it was really tough, but she won everybody over because she was just a really sweet, she was a sweetheart. She, you know, she worked really well. She knew her stuff. And, I can't really say that I wish that, that they had continued the relationship. I've thought about it, and I think that it probably was the right thing to do would be to continue our relationship. But I also think it was a decent idea, but I think that, you know, the whole Dax, Ezri, Jadzia war thing would have been crazy. I mean, I think it would have been probably a lot more interesting than the relationship between the doctor because, you know, they didn't have any time. They didn't have any time to kind of flesh out that relationship at all.
Right.
You know, it was like over. And but I do think there is, if you guys have watched the last episode, right?
Oh, yes.
Many, many times.
Yeah. Well, when Worf is getting ready to leave and he sees Ezri up on the top and she waves and he just looks at her.
Yeah.
I just wish that she would have said, screw it, I'm going with you, and just jumped off the thing and landed in his arms and they took off. You know?
You know, awesome.
She went, what am I doing? This is crazy. You know? Because she did look like, you know, like bye, but you know, there was just something there. So,
well, Michael, you never get over Worf, right?
You really don't. No, you can't, because he's the baddest in the galaxy. So,
let me ask you one quick question that's about TNG, not DS9, but because you mentioned that you wish they had done another movie like First Contact.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel your last time playing Worf was on Nemesis? What are your feelings about your role on Nemesis and how that played out?
Oh, geez, it was non-existent.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really like, I mean, there was even one, towards the end of the movie where there's a battle going on and you don't even see Worf.
Yeah.
You know, the ultimate warrior. And he's, you know, in the bathroom or something, you know, or he's busy. It made no sense whatsoever.
Were there any parts for Worf in that movie that were originally in the script that got cut out that maybe we don't know about?
No. It was always, that was another tough negotiation because I had read the script and I told everybody, they said, oh, Michael, don't you want, I said, there's nothing for me in it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have nothing to do. You know, I kind of pick Data's pieces up and that's it. You know, I mean, one little line here and a little line there. And it was, you know, there was nothing for me to do.
Yeah.
Now, from the very beginning. And I was like going, well, you know, okay, you know. But, you know, the negotiation, I mean, they were able to entice me to come back, but I wasn't, I was just okay. You know, I mean,
yeah.
It's your movie, but you know, I think that you're missing an opportunity here, but,
this brings up a point, Michael, I have to ask you, sure. Because we joke about it all the time. In your own mind, do you have an explanation for why Worf always shows up on the Enterprise when a TNG movie comes along?
You know, I will tell you that I think the producers don't really give a lot of credit to the fans. I think that it's almost like, what do you think? How should we get him back on there? Oh, who cares? You know, I mean, I think
that's what it was like in Insurrection.
Go, hey, there's no way we can do it. There's no way. And maybe they think about it long and they write and they throw things out. I don't know. But I was just blown away, you know? The first one, the first contact, got it. Made
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, that made sense. Yeah.
You know, the first movie, I hadn't gone to deep space, so I'm still in the, yeah, okay, I get yeah. it, you know? There wasn't too much for me to do in the first movie, but that's okay. I mean, it's one of those things, you know what I mean?
Well, there's the point where Picard is like, Mr. Worf, what the hell are you doing here? And then Worf starts a little explanation, and then it just fades off. They're like,
yeah,
we're not even going to try to explain this.
What are you doing here? I was in the neighborhood. What are you talking about, you know?
I was just strolling
by. If you were
by.
Going someplace, why didn't you just keep going? What, do you stop and, you know, you're going to join us now, you know? And then the other one, God, who knows? I mean, I was supposed to be an ambassador. You know,
yeah. and it was
no,
funny.
I'm not. I'm here. And you go, huh? You go,
it was yeah. funny, Michael, because we I do our other show called Literary Treks, and we were talking about Michael Piller's unpublished book Fade In, where he talks about the process of writing and producing Insurrection, and the original script actually had a pretty decent storyline for Worf and the reason that he was there on the Enterprise. And there was a whole great scene about, you know, him, and timeline wise, you had just lost Jadzia as your wife. So that he had worked all that in, and the rest of the people, the suits were like, there's too much connection here. You know, there's too much connection. What if they haven't seen the show? So like, I think you're completely right. They just weren't giving enough credit to the fans.
Yeah. I don't, like I said, I wasn't there. I don't know. I do know that Michael has a style of writing that's very unique to himself and, or had, you know, to what he, you know, cause he's gone now. But, you know, I just thought that, you know, you take so much time to do this, and the character is a great character, and he is viable, and he adds a lot to the show. You know, there's got to be a way. You know, I mean, it was very funny. I had an episode. And once again, I'll make this short. I did a TV show up in Vancouver, an episode, and they had I had an issue with one of the scenes. And they were like, well, you know, I don't know what we can do. I mean, they were just like, they just didn't know what to do. And what I said, well, you guys are writers, you know, that's what you do, you know,
exactly.
Just
yeah.
write something else, you know? and I wasn't being flippant about it, but I'm just saying, you know, I could come up with something that'll help, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, Michael Piller's this writer, and they got other writers, and they got all these people, and that's it. You know, it's sort of like a, you know, these days going to a computer programmer, you know, or a game guy that does games and say, okay, make me a game that's going to blow people away. And he comes up with Pong. You know, you would kind of go, that's it. That's
right.
From what all we've seen, that's what you've come up with, you know? And so I think that, you know, like I said, I think it's more involved than just them going, yeah, who cares? I think it's just, I think there was so much going on, maybe some political stuff. I don't know, but I agree with you. When those next two movies, I was like, so Worf just shows up.
Yeah. Don't get us wrong. We're glad Worf's there, but
yeah.
just the explanation of how he got there, it was always
oh, yeah.
sort of odd. Yeah.
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 I mean, a movie is always better with Worf than not with Worf, but it would be greater if he had a really good reason for being there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, for you, Michael, when Deep Space Nine ended, I mean, this is an incredible run for this character, and it really put you in a place where no other character had been before. With being on two different shows, being in the lead in that as well. I mean, what was it like when that came to an end?
What were your feelings when you shot What You Leave Behind, knowing that maybe this is the last time I'm going to play Worf?
Oh, you know, My feelings were a little raw at that point because I had already been through two breakups already. So
yeah.
So by that time, I was like, okay, I'm going to see these people. The show's over. I played the hell out of Worf. Okay, I think talking about the writers. I was a little concerned because that guy, Gul Dukat, he killed Jadzia, right? He should be dead, I should have gone after him.
Exactly.
And I didn't, So, it was a little anticlimactic for me, It was just a little sort of, well, okay, So, I don't know. Didn't have the finality of Next Generation or... Maybe because I've been so close, we'd been so close to each other that it was a real emotional thing. I don't know. It was a different feeling than Next Generation. So
I see. Well, we spent a lot of time here talking about Worf on Star Trek, which all of our listeners know. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, there is a pilot in development for a show called Internity involving Marina Sirtis. Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, if this show is made, if the fans out there help you guys with your Indiegogo campaign, the pilot will include a dream sequence in which you will reprise the role of Worf. And I also understand that you would be directing that scene.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about, first of all, how you got involved in the Internity project. And then tell us a little bit about how this scene came together and maybe what you and Marina mm-hmm. have talked about.
Well, we wanted to, Marina and I have been dying to work together, either as, actors or a director-actor. And I've always thought that she's one of the most underrated actors on Star Trek. And so I was just dying to be able to work with her. And we had already written a script together that we're trying to get made right now. And so when they approached her, she approached me. And so it was kind of a no-brainer, okay, yeah, I'd love to, I don't want to act in it, I'd rather direct it, because there really wasn't anything in there for me to do in terms of an actor. So I said, well, that's, and they knew that, and they said, yeah, well, that's what we want. I said, okay, great. And it was kind of that. We had a meeting with the guys, and we talked about it, and from there, we were just trying to find a way, and they're trying to find a way to put Worf in there. We are still in discussions about that because, I've never put on the makeup outside of the Star Trek universe, not even in TED 2. I mean, that wasn't really Worf makeup. That was just, so I haven't done that. And so it's kind of a tough call. I had questioned them. I said, are you sure you want to do this? But they really want to do it. So we'll see. I think, you got to live in the moment, and we'll see what happens. But that's how it came about.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Internity?
Well, I mean, it's a dramedy from where I stand in terms of how I'm going to, how I would direct it, is that there's a lot of really interesting and fun scenes in terms of, the actor's growth in this, just in the pilot. And also Marina's part as this, this doctor that comes in and who has her own issues, And I think I've always loved the hospital shows, and I've always loved, the sort of tongue-in-cheek that comes with that. And so it is, as Gene Roddenberry would say about, Star Trek, it's a people show, and that's what drew me to it.
Well, that's really cool that you'll get to have the opportunity to work with Marina again if, all the funding comes in for you guys on Indiegogo, which, guys, get out there, because this could be one of the most fun, coolest scenes ever. If we can get Michael to put the Worf back on,
Yeah.
But it's only because if people will take out the time to go to Indiegogo and support you guys.
Exactly. Exactly. It would be it's really tough for the fans, just because it's not science fiction. And they really have to let me put it this way. If when it works, we really know that they want to see it, because they usually, you know, all fans, they usually just vote on the genre that they like. You know, they don't say, well, you know, I'd like to see Patrick Stewart, but I like to see him as, you know, as a cross dresser. I mean, the fans, the Star Trek fans aren't going to come out for that, you know. But
I don't know. Might be pretty good.
His SNL, the erotic cake shop on SNL, was pretty funny.
Yeah, but I think that it is a good test. I mean, it's an interesting project, and I think it's a good test of the loyalty of our fans and the and also the viability of this pilot. I mean, we will see.
So if it happens and it goes beyond the pilot. Do you have an interest in directing on an ongoing basis? Is that something that interests you at this point in your career of doing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I started out to be a director. I mean, that's what I wanted to do. And you know, fortunately, I've directed sitcoms. I've directed some dramas and Star Trek. And so it's really what I like to do. I mean, the acting is beautiful and I still love it and I'm still going to do it. But, you know, whenever I get an opportunity, I really want to direct. I mean, I think that's where my other talent is, you know, creating something from the very beginning and, you know, kind of watching it grow and nurturing it. Mm-hmm. I think that's where a lot of the creative enjoyment is for me. And like I said, I've worked with Marina before. I directed her in a little project that we had done back in 2001, 2002. And it was just an amazing experience. I mean, I think she's fantastic, and she's a great actress, and she, you know, loves to work. And I think if anything, the fans are going to have a treat. You know, they're going to see her like they've never seen her before, but also they're going to enjoy it. And hopefully, she's going to win them over from science fiction into regular dramas and comedies. Along with being science fiction. I mean, you don't give up science fiction, because, you know, I'm science fiction. I love it. So I'm never going to give it up, but, you know.
Well, having seen Marina in an episode of Grey's Anatomy, you know, I can say that she really is fantastic, and she can play so many different roles. So I, you know, I'm excited at the prospect to see her in this kind of role and kind of that Scrubs-ish where you said it's a dramedy. So there's going to be comedy and drama, both mm-hmm. of those things together. She's very good at.
Oh God. Yes. God. Yes. And I think with my guidance, she could be even better. Don't tell
That's
her I
true.
Said that. She'll kill me.
Okay, we'll scrub that part.
Man.
Yeah, we'll make sure if she listens to this that she doesn't hear that mm-hmm. part. So, what about, again, if the show is funded and you do the pilot and it gets picked up as a series, have you and Marina talked about the possibility of having some of your fellow TNG cast members come on from time to time, not necessarily as their characters from Star Trek, but just having guest star appearances along the way?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, you know, the interesting thing is that the Next Generation and Deep Space, especially Deep Space, I think those actors were well-known actors already, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, when we started TNG, we weren't like well-known as much as we were just working actors, you know? Mm-hmm. We were working before we got TNG and, you know, we did sitcoms, we did this, we did that. But the actors on Deep Space were, you know, Avery and Armin and Renee Bergeron. I mean, Jesus, they were, you know, not household names. I think Renee was, but and Avery.
Renee was for me. Yeah.
Yeah, and Avery too. I mean, he was, you know. So I think that it is a great opportunity, and I would love to see it. I mean, I would. The one thing I would love to do is just set up a thing where, you know, three or four times a year we see these actors, but we don't want to do stunt casting where they just come in and, oh, hi, you know, and it's a cute homage or something like that. You know, we really want to give them something to really get their, sink their teeth into that they would enjoy. It would help us. It would help them in their careers and, you know, for people to see them doing something that's going to be, you know, incredibly different. So, So I'm definitely for that because, you know, they're incredible actors.
You know, I think fans really connect with that because one thing that I notice, and we have a listeners discussion group for our network here, one thing that I notice with many fans is when they see an actor from Star Trek in any other TV show anywhere, they want to let everyone know they saw it. They'll take screen grabs. They're like, you know, here was Nana Visitor in this show. You know, here was Marina Sirtis in this show, and they love it. And I think that that alone is a big draw for fans.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, are there any other things that you're working on right now that you would like to tell everyone about?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm trying to do the Worf spinoff, as you guys probably know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's coming down to the wire here, or the end game, which is, you know, is Paramount going to say yes or no? And that's going to come very soon, I think. We're going to find out. Also, Marina and I wrote a script about Maria Callas, the opera singer. And, you know, Maria Callas is Greek, Marina's Greek, and she looks like Maria Callas. And we've gotten some really good feedback on the script. I mean, people actually love the script very much. And so we are working on that. Once again, it would be, you know, I wrote the script and she and I collaborated on the screenplay, but I wrote the script and I want to direct it. And that to me would be a dream. So those are the things that we're working on now. And I'm still doing voiceovers and auditioning for stuff. So it's a different, you know, it's a different time in my career now, but I'm thoroughly enjoying myself.
Yeah, it's very cool. So if people want to keep up with what you're doing, are you active in social media? What's your website? Where can people go?
Yeah, Twitter and Facebook.
Awesome. Well, Michael, thank you so much for your time tonight. We really hope that Internity works out for you guys. So
yeah, me too. It should be a blast. It should be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool to see. Hopefully, our listeners will jump in and help out and spread the word to other fans as well. Mm-hmm. And be really cool.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's really a pleasure to have talked to you.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Well, Matthew, that was really awesome talking to Michael Dorn about Worf, and just such a nice guy. And I love how relaxed he was just talking about what went on over the course of all those years on two different series.
You know, I almost feel like we were sitting in Quark's bar just hanging out with Worf, you know, and Michael is, yeah, exactly, his prune juice. Michael is so authentic, you know. I just feel like he is who he is everywhere, and I felt like you could really tell that. And what a joy to have said that we interviewed Michael Dorn on The Orb. I'm really geeking out here at this point, Chris.
It's really fantastic. Well, we talked to Michael there at the end a lot about Internity, and we want to tell you a little bit more about that and where the funding campaign is. But first, we want to remind everyone that The Orb is just one of many, many shows that we have here on Trek FM, covering every corner of the Star Trek universe. And in fact, it may not be out quite yet when you hear this Orb, but coming up very shortly on Earl Grey, you'll actually get to hear Marina's side of Internity as well. But here's a quick look at some of those other shows that we have for you here on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Yeah, he can edit the crap out of a movie. Literally. Like, that's actually how he got the job on for Nemesis, is he edited the crap out of Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, and Mission Impossible 2. And they're like, thanks, Stuart Baird.
Earl Grey.
Oh, by the way, 6 hours in, if you press shift, you'll run throughout the whole game.
Press shift when your characters are moving, and they'll actually move at a reasonable pace.
The Orb.
If he had, like, a game card, his power you know, like, would be higher than any other captain for their persuasion power.
You'll be like, damn, I was winning, and then he went and played a Cisco card on me.
The ready room.
Someone pointed out that this is actually the shortest title of any Star Trek episode. It's shorter than Voyager's Q squared by half a character because the two is superscript.
We're number one. We're number one.
To the journey! It's fake intimacy.
Thank you.
It is them trying to say Chakotay knows Janeway so well that just by fiddling her comm badge, he knows the crap's gonna hit the fan. Commentary, Trek Stars.
Lost World's a terrible movie. I haven't seen Jurassic World, though.
The 602 Club.
We wake up in the middle of the night, and I pop back in episode 5, and I watch it again. Like, there's something about this movie that from even then, you know, I'd seen them all. It's all clean slate. This one was already my favorite.
Literary Treks.
It definitely starts in a very dark place, and it doesn't get much brighter at all, you know, until we get to the end, and you know, there's some hope there. But yeah, definitely, it's a dark book.
Women at Warp.
There were no, oh, you're a girl, so you can't do that. It's like, well, you know what? You used to hang out with the Cardassians, or the Klingons, so let's see what that would look like. Why don't you try that on for a while?
And introducing Meta Trex.
If you're commander of a starship, 1,000 choices are going to confront you in the course of your day in the captain's chair, and you just can't ignore them. So asking ourselves whether we really have free will is just a meaningless question on that view.
I personally would like to be confronted with the choice to warp to Ryza, just saying.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can get them everywhere that you get your podcasts. You can go to itunes.com/trekfm or just look us up in iTunes. We're a featured provider for Apple there in the store. Also, you can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher. You can go to trek.fm and find all the shows there and get RSS links. We're pretty much everywhere. Just search for trek.fm and you'll find the shows. Now, Matthew, we talked about Eternity with Michael and what the show is going to be about. What we didn't go into in any detail is the actual funding campaign on Indiegogo. So to tell everyone a little bit about what they're trying to do, they're trying to raise $100,000 to do the pilot, and they're doing fixed funding on Indiegogo, which means they need to actually hit that target in order to get any of the money. So it's like Kickstarter in that sense. And right now, they're at $14,518. They have 17 days to go. So they really need everyone's help if you want to see Marina and Michael do this show and see, you know, future cameos by other Star Trek actors and all the great stuff they have planned for you. Now, it sounds like an insurmountable amount with 17 days to go, but if you really break it down, it's not so daunting. In fact, they have a DVD perk. And if just 2,428 people claimed the DVD perk, they would hit the target. They also have a digital download perk. They only need 3,000 people to claim the digital download perk in order to hit the target. Or if you go for their merchandise pack perk, they only need 739 people there. Or let's think about how many TNG fans, because like Michael said, even a year after TNG finished, they were at the height of their popularity. TNG, of all the Star Trek series, TNG has the biggest fan base. It's loved around the world by millions and millions of people. And if just 85,000 TNG fans gave $1, they would be able to make this show. So if you want to see this, even if you can only give that $1, head over to Indiegogo and check it out. The name of the show is Internity. That's Internity. So it's like intern and eternity mashed together, Internity. And if you type that into Indiegogo, it's going to come right up. They've got some videos up there. They've got all kinds of other information about the show and all the different perks that they're offering. And, you know, hopefully you can support the show because I love Marina. I love Michael. I would love to see them do this. Don't you agree, Matthew?
You know what, Chris? I would. I'm actually on the Indiegogo site right now, picking out my perk. So I'm doing my part, and I hope everybody else will do their part as well.
So again, thanks so much to Michael for his time tonight. And if you'd like to leave some feedback on the show, let us know what you think about the things that Michael shared about playing Worf or what you think about Internity. There are many ways for you to get in touch with us. Of course, you can find us on Twitter. Our username is TrekFM. You can find our Facebook page at facebook.com/TrekFM. Or you can go to our listeners group called the Babel Conference on Facebook and join in the big conversation that we have there every day with so many of our listeners. It is a closed group, so you'll need to click join and we'll let you right in. But we have wonderful discussions there that really are an extension of our shows. And we love doing that because we don't want this to be a one-way street of us broadcasting to you guys. We want to actually talk to you every day. So we hope you'll join us over there. And the way you get there is just to type B-A-B-E-L into the search field on Facebook, and it will come right up. And also, if you want to send us a voicemail, you can go to speakpipe.com/TrekFM. And you can send us email by going to trek.fm/contact. And using the form there, choose a show, choose the orb, and that'll come to both Matthew and me by email. Now, Matthew, when you're not watching that compilation you created of your favorite Worf moments from Deep Space Nine, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, that takes up a lot of my time, so I don't get a lot of, as much time I would like to tweet or anything anymore, but if you want to follow me, you can do that on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram at MRushing. You can also find me doing Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek, as well as interview the author. So it's a great place if you're missing Worf in your life and in the Prime universe. Check us out on Literary Treks. It's a great place to be. You can also find me doing the 602 Club on the network. We talk about all things geeky, but don't necessarily have anything to do with Star Trek and new movies, old movies, everything in between. And so join us over there. And Ruby always serves up some good drinks. And you can also find me on my own personal blog. It's 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not busy supporting Internity on Indiegogo and following with rapt attention to make sure that this gets done, where can we find you?
Yes, I'm definitely going to be doing that, Matthew. And I'd also like to do one more thing before I tell you where to find me, and that is to thank our associate producers here on The Orb who help us get this show out to you guys every week. And those are Ruth Ward, Will Wynn, and Ken Tripp. They really help us out here on the network doing various things and making sure that we can get The Orb out and also our other shows here as well, because they're all patrons of the network. We're a listener-supported network, so we need your help in order to keep these shows coming so we can do things like interview Michael Dorn and get that information out there to you guys about what it was like behind the scenes on Star Trek, and of course all of our discussions that we have as well about the minutiae of DS9 and other series. And the people who support us make all the difference in the world to us, and we really appreciate it. And they do that through Patreon. That's patreon.com/TrekFM. That's the URL that will get you to our page. And you can see the perks that we have there. We have this great thing called Patron Zone, which is a special website just for patrons, where we do early releases of our shows, and we do other exclusive content, and we have wallpapers and ringtones and all kinds of perks for you. And it just really means the world to us, everyone who supports us. So please head over to patreon.com/TrekFM and check that out. Support us if you can. It costs a lot of money to run this network, and we want to be able to keep doing it. So we hope that you will support us over there. Now, where can you find me? Well, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's also my name on Facebook and pretty much everywhere in social media. I'm there in the Babel Conference, so I would love to talk to you there in that discussion group. Elsewhere on the network, you can find me doing The Ready Room, which is a show where we talk about Star Trek news and all 5 live-action Star Trek series. I have a different co-host pretty much every show on there, and other hosts from all around the network, as well as other guests, come. We do panels, and we just have great discussions there. It's our original show here on the network, and I hope everyone will check that out. You can also find me doing, from time to time, Hyper Channel, which is a short news show, and Continuing Mission, which is about fan films and independent productions. And then you can find my writing about Star Trek on the official website at StarTrek.com. So if you'd like to read what I have to say instead of listening to me from time to time, you can do that there. My column is called Trekspectives, and my most recent one actually ties into DS9. And then outside of Star Trek, you can find me on a podcast called Metropolis On Air, which is tied into the magazine that I run here in Tokyo. It's not about Star Trek. It's about Japan and culture and life in the city. And we do interviews and we have all kinds of stuff on that show. So if you want to hear me do something a little bit different, you can find that in iTunes. Just search Metropolis On Air or go to metropolisjapan.com and you'll find it on that website as well. All right, Matthew, well, that's everything we have for the listeners today. It was a great time talking to Michael Dorn. And next time, we're planning to get back, I believe, right, and finish up our series on the season 6 opening arc with Sacrifice of Angels.
Can't wait, Chris. And we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.